ministered to people. Now, it's obvious ministry. When Jesus was on earth, he ministered to people. Now, his obvious ministry was through preaching and teaching, telling men and women of the good news of God's kingdom, calling on them to live in accordance with God's will for their lives. But Jesus had another way of ministering to people. He had another way, besides just talking to them. His other way of ministering to people was by touching them. And we just heard of his ministry of touch in our reading from St. Mark's Gospel. One day, Jesus was walking along. A man was brought to him who was dead, and who, as a result of his deafness, also had trouble speaking. The folks who brought this man to Jesus asked Jesus to lay his hands upon their friend. And obliging them, Jesus took the man aside from the crowd, put his fingers in the man's ears, then he spat and touched the man's tongue with his spit. And then, looking up to heaven, Jesus said just two words, "Be open." And immediately, we're told, the man was able to hear. And he was not only able to hear, he was also able to talk. He's able to talk as clearly and as intelligently as if he had been doing it all his life. But there were other occasions, in addition to this one, when Jesus also practiced a ministry of touch. Said, "Lord, if you will, if you want to, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hands and touched the leper and said, "I will be clean." And immediately the man's leprosy was cured. He was completely, instantly healed by Jesus' touch. Again and again in the four Gospels, we read of Jesus and healing. Like the time when he was walking down the street and two blind men came to him crying, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us." And so Jesus reached out and touched their eyes. And their eyes were opened and their darkness disappeared. Jesus even raised people from the dead by touching them. The only son of a widow of Nain was dead and was being carried to the cemetery for the burial. Jesus had pity upon this poor woman, a widow whose only son, her only means of support, had been taken away from her. And so he reached out and touched the dead body of her son. And the son immediately sat up and started talking. Another time, the 12-year-old daughter of a man called Jairus had died. Jesus followed the distraught father home and went with him to where his daughter's body lay. And taking the dead little girl's hand in his, Jesus said to her, "Child, arise." And we're told that her spirit at once returned to her body, and she got up amazing. flabbergasting everybody who was present. In every case, Jesus touched the person he was helping. And the touch of the master's hand brought transformation, brought healing, brought renewed life. That was long ago. But today, the touch of Jesus has not lost its power. People are still being touched. Men and women are still being touched with the hand of the living, resurrected Jesus, who is still present upon us in power. And today, we who are Christians, we who are believers, can still feel, if we wish, the potent touch of the Master's hand. As we visualize in our mind's eye Jesus standing in our presence, we can still feel his hand upon us. Now, there are several ways that we can feel the touch of the Master's hand. The first way that we can feel the touch of the Master's hand is obviously through healing. Jesus is still the great physician. Jesus is still healing men and women in body and in mind and in spirit. He is still healing diseased and disabled minds. He's still healing broken hearts. He's still healing troubled minds. Because the age of miracles is not past. The scriptures tell us that Jesus is the same yesterday and today and forever. And so if Jesus healed yesterday, he can also heal today. Human beings have not changed in their needs. And Jesus has not changed in his power. Neither has he changed in his willingness to heal. And his healing extends beyond people's bodies and minds and spirits. As Jesus heals people's bodies, minds, and spirits, he also heals relationships. Many a troubled partnership has been healed by the touch of the Master's hand. Peace has come to many a family, many a community, previously torn asunder by turmoil, by dissension. Jesus can still heal. His touch still has transformational power. And we can still feel, if we wish, the touch of the Master's hand. The second way that we can feel the touch of the Master's hand is in what Peter Marshall called the tap on the shoulder. Dr. Marshall, the name may be familiar to you, was a Scottish Presbyterian minister who came to America in the 20s as a penniless young man and rose to become one of his adopted country's most prominent clerics. Arrived at that point where he was invited to become the chaplain of the United States Senate. You may have seen his life story in the film In the Mid-50s, A Man Called Peter, based on Marshall's widow's biography of her late husband. Peter Marshall was a master of omelets, the art of I know he was a minister because I've heard recordings of his sermons, and they were truly monumental works of high art. they sometimes hint towards the ornate. Some of his critics, his detractors, used to derisively refer to Peter Marshall as Twittery Birds Marshall. Sometimes he did go over the top. But in one of his most famous sermons, Marshall described the way that God called him to the ministry. Marshall called it the tap on the shoulder. Men and women who have been truly called in the Christ ministry will know exactly what Peter Marshall was talking about. When Jesus is tapping us on the shoulder to enter the ministry of his church, we know, trust me, we know, there is no uncertainty. And oftentimes, there ensues an inward struggle. Are we going to obey that tap on the shoulder, or are we going to ignore it? But the tap on the shoulder is not restricted to those whom Jesus is called to enter the ordered ministry. We must remember, and we must continue to celebrate, the revolutionary doctrine taught by the Protestant reformers called the priesthood of all believers. The priesthood of all believers is the quintessentially Protestant doctrine. It teaches that all Christians are called to a ministry of service to Christ and his church. It could be any aspect of the life and work of the church to which we are called: church administration, sacred music, religious education. And also in the secular world, there's an associated teaching popularly known as the Protestant work ethic. And so many people don't understand what that is. I remember Peter C. Newman writing a history of the Hudson's Bay Company and most of the factories in the Hudson's Bay Company in the early years were from Scotland. And Peter C. Newman, a Polish Catholic, was under the impression that the Protestant work ethic meant that we had to work our way to our salvation, which could not be further from the truth. We believed that we had been guaranteed our salvation by faith. The Protestant work ethic is that we can serve God as God's ministers in our secular callings, because for the Reformed Christian, there's no such thing really as a secular calling. And so we can be a butcher and a baker or a candlestick maker. We can be a physician. We can be a lawyer. We can be a teacher. We can be a homemaker. It doesn't matter. If we do these things as unto the Lord, we are serving God as his ministers. That's what the Protestant word is. And it comes out of this, as I say, quintessentially Protestant doctrine of the priesthood of all believers. God has called us all to be his ministers. So no matter who we are, no matter what stage of life we're in, no matter what our life situation happens to be at the moment, Jesus would be very well tapping us on the shoulder and calling upon us to minister in his name. Calling upon us to minister in his name, a ministry that's unique to us. A ministry that only we can do best. And when that happens, when we are called, we will be feeling the tap on the shoulder. We will be feeling the touch is when we feel his restraint. You know, sometimes Jesus tries to restrain us. Sometimes Jesus tries to hold us back from doing something that he really would rather that we not do. Let me give you an example. Often in Christian life, we're tempted to run ahead of God. This is true of an awful lot of Christians, including, I regret to confess, me. This is often because when we have entered wholeheartedly into Christian service, we've acquired a tremendous enthusiasm for ministry, and that's great, that's wonderful, that's terrific. But sometimes this enthusiasm makes us impatient. Sometimes in our impatience we become impetuous. And so we act premature. Sometimes unwisely so. And I know because I've done it dozens of times. We get great ideas for service in the church, but instead of cautiously thinking them over and praying on them and testing them, instead of making certain that they are the result of God's will and not just our right idea, instead of doing those things, we tend intentionally to jump in with both feet and expect everybody else to jump in with us. After all, it's a great idea. It was our idea. But is it a reality? Really? That's the very time when we should be listening to the still small voice of Jesus speaking to our hearts. And if we listen to Jesus, we might just feel his restraining hand upon us, saying, not yet. Think it over first. This is not quite what I have in mind. So think about it some more. And if we did that more often, many of our mistakes, many of our stupidities would be avoided. And the road on which we're traveling through life might just be less rocky. We should therefore be sensitive to the touch of the Master's restraining. But there's a fourth way, which is the opposite. The fourth way that we can feel the touch of the Master's hand. And that's when we feel his encouraging shove. Many people are living their lives in a rut. Everybody's heard the definition of a rut. A rut is a grave with both ends, not that. And many Christians are in a rut. Many Christians active in their local congregation are in a rut. Their motto is, we never did it that way before. Someone has called these words the seven last words of the church. I mean, you've heard of the seven last words from the cross, which Jesus spoke before he died. Well, these are the seven last words of the church before it died. We never did it that way before. We do not always welcome change. We don't always welcome change because it threatens our familiar and comfortable way of doing things. And, well, again, this applies to me too, because I'm a pretty conservative kind of guy. And yet, our way is not always God's way. God has a vision of what we can be. It's God's vision for us, and for us to realize that vision, Jesus sometimes has to come behind us and give us an encouraging shove. Jesus has a vision of what each one of us can be, and that vision is usually far greater than what we're doing right now. Most of us haven't even come close to realizing our full potential as human beings. Oftentimes we're afraid to kill. Oftentimes we're afraid to raise our sights. Why? Well, often because we're afraid of the unknown, or we're afraid of fail. We're afraid that we're going to fall flat on our faces. Yet it's never too late. It's never too late for that, sir. It's never impossible to realize that long-held dream that we have nursed in our hearts for so long. And yet we've never had the courage or the will to even try, to even take the first step towards achieving. And that's when we need to feel the encouraging shove of the Master's hand. Push it! In spite of ourselves, to achieve what we have always dreamt to achieve. And to succeed when we were always afraid that we might fall and fail. Because believe this with all your heart, that Jesus wants the best for you. Jesus wants the best for each one of us, and sometimes he has to push us hard to realize that. When we feel the touch of the Master's hand, when we feel his encouraging shift. If we allow Jesus to push us in the direction that we would have us go, we'll experience the fit and the final that we can feel the touch. The Master's hand. We can feel the touch of the Master's hand in the touch of blessing. Now, the word bless has oftentimes been used by ministers in the pulpit. But congregation doesn't really know what it means because it's never been defined. It's kind of like the word grace. The grace of God. But what is this? You know? Who defined it? Nice, euphonious words. But what do they mean? Well, my understanding of blessing. That it is essentially the same as empowerment. When God blesses us, God empowers us. When God blesses us, God empowers us to be the best that we can be. When God touches us with his hand of blessing, we can feel his life force flood, racing through our systems like a tidal wave. When God touches us with his hand of blessings, he renews our strength. In the words of the prophet Isaiah, we'll mount up with wings like eagles, we'll run and not be weary, we'll walk and not faint. When God touches us with his hand of blessing, he renews our strength. And in the words of St. Paul, will be exulting, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so, brothers and sisters, we might ask ourselves, might ask each one of us ourselves, have I ever felt the touch of the Master's hand on my life? Have I ever felt his hand being laid upon me? Whether it was restraining, whether it was encouraging, whether it was empowering, whether it was healing, have I ever felt his hand being laid upon me? If not, we can. If we can feel the touch of the Master's hand, if we seek harmony with him, if we seek oneness with him, if we simply identify, if we relate to him, because he wants to relate to us, if we relate to him, we will feel his touch. We will feel his touch, and we will know